Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Fixed Income Conversation Corner podcast series on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Joining us for the conversation today, glad to welcome back Leslie Falcodio, Head of Taxable Fixed Income Strategy for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, as well as Scott DiMaggio, Head of Fixed Income for AllianceBernstein. Leslie, Scott, it's great to be with you here today at our 1285 podcast studio here in New York. Thank you for dropping by. Leslie, I'll pass it over to you to lead today's conversation.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate that. And thank you, Scott. I mean, what a great time to be here. And, you know, I have to say, I mean, you and I have spoken so much and, you know, you're a good friend and I have a tremendous amount of professional respect for you as well. So I'm so happy to have you on, you know, the podcast today, particularly with what we're seeing now. So let's just get into it, right? We have a lot to talk about. Listen, when we think about what's happened with the fixed income market, you know, we saw these betting markets start to put in that Trump trade, if you will, well ahead of the election. And while, you know, it's a positive that it wasn't something that was uncertain that went on for a week, you know, we do have some implications for fixed income investors, right? You know, given, you know, that we have now a red sweep. So how do you sort of look at that? And, you know, what do you think are going to be sort of the trends going forward with the information that we have right now?
All right. Well, Leslie, thanks for having me back. It's always good to see you. And like I said, we've known each other for a long time, so I'm looking forward to this. Like, I think with a red sweep confirmed, we start analyzing what were some of the campaign promises. And the bond market's immediate attention was focused on larger fiscal deficits. Right? Larger fiscal deficits means more bond supply. And that fiscal situation also means a higher probability of more inflation. As you know, the budget deficit's around 6.5% of GDP, and investors are worried that this number is going to go up meaningfully from here, and we'll get a return of the bond vigilantes, right, from back in the 90s. We should also remember we have more, with the prospect of more spending, we also have discussions about more tariffs. That renews fears of inflation, and now people start questioning what's priced in for the Fed. Right? Maybe we have too much priced in for 24, you know, or for 25. So overall, it's a pretty bad cocktail for the Treasury market and for the bond market. But Leslie, we have to, you know, maybe caution your listeners that there's a lot priced in. As you said, the bond market's retraced 60, 70 basis points from that kind of, you know, beginning of maybe the red momentum to where we are today. So could there be more to come? You know, always possible. But there has been, you know, a lot of repricing in the bond market.
That's absolutely right. I mean, in this whole year with interest rate volatility, we've seen the market reassess and reprice the Fed projected path constantly, right? It's hard landing, soft landing, no landing. And that's created, you know, a decent amount of volatility within interest rates. But when you think about, you know, the month and a half that we have left, I mean, there's certain sectors of fixed income that are white knuckling it, right? We started at 3.85 10-year yield, great carry for a lot of these sectors. But what do you think happens from now to the end of the year in terms of fixed income performance?
Yeah, I think we'll get a lot of, I mean, we're going to get a lot of noise out of D.C. We're going to get a lot of probably more fiscal fears, probably some more tariff fears right over that time. So I think that volatility that you alluded to will continue to be, you know, very, very relevant. You know, what is a certain, if you will, in that white knuckle environment is spreads, right? IG investment grade, high yield, even emerging market spreads have continued to be a sector that we like. They're a sector that have performed extremely well. Right? We're hitting pretty close to the all-time tights in both high yield and investment grade. So that corporate market is not really worried about the volatility we've seen in rates, not really worried about, you know, what potentially could be some of the policy actions coming. You know, we were looking at a chart just before this, and, you know, the last time investment grade spreads got to these levels, I mean, they stayed here for 27 months. So to think this is just an anomaly that will quickly wash out over the next 6 weeks, right, history doesn't suggest that will be the case. So we could be in this environment where, despite Treasury volatility, despite fiscal fears, the credit market, the corporate market, those spreads continue to do, right, quite well. So I think you want to stay invested in those areas.
We completely agree with that, Scott. And as you know, it's not spreads that's the tailwind to your total return, it's carry. Right. And, you know, given the level of rates, we have really good carry in these sectors. But when we talk about the Fed, you know, I can tell you from the CIO standpoint, you know, I looked this morning, Powell's just out this afternoon, a little bit hawkish. But when I looked this morning, there was probably about a 60-70% chance of a cut in December. We believe they do. We also have four cuts in 2025 that we believe occurs. And we know that the market has really taken that out and is more of a hawkish standpoint. So two questions. One is that what is your outlook in terms of, you know, the Fed path? I mean, when it comes to December and 2025, and how do you think the market responds to that? Meaning that do you think that because of things like tariffs, you know, we have this inflation fear, which the inflation expectations have priced in. Are we going to get the response like we had in September where he cuts 50 and interest rates go up? So how do you sort of see this playing out?
Yeah, I would say so. We would agree with you in that we think the Fed does cut in December, and we think they go a few more times in the first quarter. That'll get rates to, you know, just below 4%, and that might be a level where they say, okay, let's pause and let's see what actually does. What kind of fiscal packages, tariff packages, do we see? We think by the end of next year, rates get down to 3.5%. I think why that's important is, you know, as you know, there's $7 trillion in cash assets.
Yep.
If that interest rate path proves correct, the yield on those assets will come down quite a bit. The yield curve should stay steep or steepen up from here, which means 10-year bonds will yield a lot more than cash. And we think that'll start to become attractive for people to enter the bond market. So that's attractive. You know, with tariffs, what we have to remember is there's a difference between price and inflation. So we'll get if tariffs does go through as is proposed, and there's a lot of fear around that, that will be a one-time hit to prices. Right? You're not going to get another tariff the next year and the next year and the next year, the same magnitude. So chances are that'll be a one-off inflationary spike. That historically, when that's happened in oil, the Fed has looked through that and said, yep, we know it's a one-time, in 6 months, 12 months, this will roll out of the data, and we will be okay. So the price level will stay high, which will make a lot of people unhappy, but, you know, nonetheless, from the inflation point of view. So I think that gives the Fed at least for the next couple. The Fed's going to respond to data. We've always said about the Fed that inflation is going to determine when they start to cut, and the jobs market is going to determine how much they cut. So if we get a couple of weak payrolls, I think December probability goes up, and I think more moves in the first quarter continue to go higher. But, you know, you hate to kind of take the cop out of, like, watch the data, but I think, you know, we have a lot of speculation right now about what could happen. The data tells us what actually is happening.
Yeah, we agree with you 100% on that. And, you know, we've stated as well as our economist has, that, you know, when you have – you don't know what the tariffs are going to be. But you know, we feel very confident that the Fed's going to look through that, right? Not to mention, I mean, you have to wait and see, but, you know, tariffs aren't actually growth positive. So we have to – that's why we are keeping our four cuts in 2025, and we completely agree with you on that. And honestly, by the time that these are implemented and it goes through the data, it takes time, right? It takes time for even the Fed to see it. And I think one of the things that he said in the last FOMC meeting, which I thought was great – we don't assume and we don't speculate.
That's right.
They really want to concentrate on the data. So although, right, I mean, everyone's been so towing the same line as data dependent, but that's the way it is. And I think because of that, too, you might have a little bit of interest rate volatility still, but we completely agree with you in that the Fed will look through it. But let's talk about some of these. And, you know, we should, given the fact that, listen, both equity and fixed income are full, right? And they're not cheap in general, right? So even though the fixed income market is offering tremendous carry and that'll be a tailwind to total return, what do you think are some of the headwinds here that you know everyone wants to look for because everyone's with more and we are on the soft landing camp, the Fed looks through, you know, rising inflation expectations because of tariff. What is that sort of, you know, not necessarily fat tail, but a headwind that you're concerned about when it comes to fixed income?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest, you know, I think the policies out of Washington could really drive that inflation and that fiscal discussion. And, you know, maybe we've been softened up the last couple of years, focusing on economic data and monetary policy, right? And I think as, you know, with economic backgrounds and in the bond market, we have a lot more comfort in assessing those situations and what that means for yields, what that means for bond prices. Now we're going to have to observe, you know, similar to 2016, what actually comes out of Washington. How impactful is it for prices? How impactful is it for the growth environment, right? Tariffs could mean a couple different things. They could be inflationary. They could also be very growth negative, right, in a way. So I think we're going to keep our eyes on what's coming out of D.C. And remember, we still have 60 days or so till the to the inauguration. So we have a lot of time before we start getting any, any real trickling of data. I'd also say, in addition to the headwinds, we do have tailwinds right out there. And Leslie, you talked about the Fed, and typically when the Fed cuts interest rates, that's a pretty good environment. I mentioned earlier, $7 trillion in cash. Eventually that won't stay in cash. And we tell all of our investors, and I'm sure you do, cash is not a great long-term investment, and $7 trillion of it seems like a pretty big. I also think an interesting dynamic is, again, depending on the policies, we're going to see this U.S. exceptionalism, right? The U.S. is going to pull growth in from the rest of the world. That's going to create opportunities for other central banks to cut rates more aggressively, right? Europe's going to have to stimulate. We think the U.K., Canada, right, Australia, a number of these countries are going to have to cut rates more aggressively. So clients that can take advantage of that global opportunity set, we think that's a trade that could very play out over next year.
Yeah, well, I completely agree. One of the things you and I were talking about earlier before we went on air is that some of the value that we see in the market, right? And I know we were talking about, and I'm curious as to what your thoughts are. I know we were talking about munis, that you've had a very good tailwind there from asset gathering and what you've seen. And I'm curious as to what else with munis and other sectors, like, how are you sort of allocating right now, given the fact that, when you look across the sector, although spreads don't necessarily, there's nothing that you really see was like, wow, this is like incredibly cheap, right? So how are you sort of allocating within the fixed income market as a whole, both U.S. and abroad?
Yeah. I mean, first talking about munis, I mean, the munis had a pretty brutal third quarter. We had a lot of supply, so a lot of the municipal issuers were coming to market trying to get deals done before the election. Who knows what the outcome might have been. So we've seen a tremendous amount of supply, and that market is still so supply-demand driven, and unlike some of the other markets that we invest in. So that amount of supply really caused yields to widen, right, and spreads to widen to treasuries. And as we sit here today, we don't know what the tax environment will be next year, but regardless of which, we think munis look cheap. Right? The belly of the muni curve is expensive, kind of that 3-year, 5-year is expensive. But if you can push out and you have the long enough time horizon to buy some of the 15-year, type munis, I mean, that's a very, very cheap sector of the market. And why not lock in those yields longer term? Leslie, what you said resonated with me in that, right, spreads don't determine return. Yields, right? Yields and carry determine that return. And when we look at high yield, 6.8% yields, right? That's a pretty good predictor, or historically has been a pretty good predictor of what returns will be. So, I think if you can lock in high yield at around these 7% levels, that's a pretty attractive environment. We have to remember, like, a lot of the policies that are being discussed will benefit the small mid-cap issuers. A lot of those are the high-yield bonds. Defaults will remain pretty low. And if you get a growth environment, even, 1.5% to 2%, that should be a pretty good backdrop, right, for high yield. So despite the tight spreads, I think yield matters. I think clients do buy yield. That's what determines return. So we encourage clients to, still take credit risk. We think it still makes sense. And you should push out the duration spectrum, right? You can do it in munis if if that's the tax situation you're in. If you move into some shorter duration income type funds, just get out of the 3-month, the one day, 3-month type paper. And even if you're afraid, get into some of that 2-year, right? Those 2-year type of instruments. Pick up that yield, lock in some of the levels that we're at, because again, we don't think they'll be here in a few quarters.
We agree with that, and I do have to say, I do have to ask you too, because we get this question a lot, because the bond vigilantes are all over the headline risk, right? All we hear about is deficit, supply, bond vigilante. Are we going to go to 6% 10-year treasury yield? Now, our view on that has always been that supply is known, right? This supply is expected. This isn't some, we're not, for at least for the next several quarters, not in October 2023 situation. But, supply is secondary, right? It's not a driver, it's a passenger. Growth and inflation is the primary. How do you, I'm sure your clients as well have, because it's all so hyped all over the media about deficit and bond vigilantes. How do you address that to your clients?
Yeah. I mean, we've used quant tools. I've used quant tools my entire life, right? And whenever you forecast a yield curve, whenever you forecast a level, right? The one factor that has no statistical significance is deficits, right? And if you look at a place like Japan, right, they've been running, you know, 350, 400% of GDP, and their 10-year bond is 1%. Right. So I think those growth and inflation, we would agree with you, are the drivers. You know, that said, whenever bond yields do sell off, we kind of raise the deficit discussion, right, is, oh my gosh, the U.S. will not be able to finance, right, to finance itself. And look, you know, there may come a point, there's not a level where a government cannot finance itself, right? It's when does it lose the confidence of the bond investors? And I don't think we're there yet, right? You know, if we do come out, and a lot of ifs in here, right? A lot of ifs and fear-mongering out there. But if we come out with massive 12, 13% fiscal deficits, right, next year, if that can pass through Congress, et cetera, yeah, maybe we start to see a little bit more stress on the bond market. But, you know, we've been operating okay at 6.5%, right, deficit level. And if we're around there, I don't see why, you know, why the bond market's not priced for that, right? It's not priced for, you know, around here for that sort of an outcome.
Yeah, we've been using that same logic as well, but I think understandably so, just because it's such a big hype in the media and you have people, you know, constantly saying, and, you know, this deficit's going to cause 10-year interest rates to really skyrocket. You know, growth and inflation main, supply is secondary, you know, the market is prepared for it. It doesn't mean you ignore it, but I think the market is, you know, really, really prepared for it. And, you know, we always talk about things like the term premium and what you're being compensated for. And you know, finally, we're starting to see, as we should, that term premium rise and people get compensated a little bit for going out to the back end of the curve, right? Yeah. As we, hopefully, our anticipation is that yield curve continues to normalize upward sloping.
Yeah. I mean, Leslie, as you know, the inverted yield curve, flat yield curves are the worst thing for bond investors and bond returns. And if we actually can get this scenario to play out where we get a steep yield curve, that's when you can pick up a lot of the roll and carry, a lot of the known characteristics and bonds that lead to some pretty good returns. So it's been a rocky couple of years in bonds, right? Three years now. You know, we do think that, look, we're going to have definitely some volatility, as you point out, as we get through a new administration and what policies they want to deploy, but we think these yield levels do start to become attractive to, you know, for our clients.
And I do think that when the yield curve, you know, is on this upward sloping, that $7 trillion in money market funds will definitely start to be dispersed a little bit more into the fixed income market as well. So any thoughts that you want to just leave us with, Scott? This has been a really great conversation.
Yeah, no, I mean, Leslie, it has been, and enjoy the questions and the debate. Look, I think as touched upon, right, if you know, for us, it's getting clients out of cash. If you're afraid, right, we call it like crawl, right, moving some short duration income type stuff, right? If you're feeling a little braver and you think that duration is attractive here, right, go into munis, right, go into something that has a bit more duration. And if you are looking for equity surrogates, you're worried about the equity market valuation, right? High yield at these high 6% type yield levels are probably a pretty good place to lock that in. So we still do think there's opportunity in the fixed income markets, right? There's never a free lunch, as clients are well aware, mm-hmm. right? But we think this backup in yields are giving clients a better entry level, you know, than we had, and people should take advantage of it.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time. And again, you've been on this podcast so many times. You're so insightful, and you give great guidance and great advice to our, you know, advisors and clients. So thanks again. And I know when I have you on, you know, after January 20th, you know, or maybe January 21st, we'll have a lot more things to talk about, and we'll remember this conversation. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting first 6 months of the year. But, you know, I think if anything, that's small volatility, the volatility we've seen, creates opportunity. And I think that you would agree with that going forward. So thanks so much, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to our January discussion.
There we go.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS CBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.